Today is Monday, July 19th, and you're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, foreign missions urge Taliban to halt Afghanistan offensives.
Australia, Canada, the EU, and Germany were among those calling for the Taliban to halt offenses.
Plus, Biden administration blames misinformation for surge in COVID cases.
Biden administration is calling for social media firms to do more to counter the spread of vaccine misinformation on their sites.
Also, Israeli spyware used to hack phones of journalists, government officials, and human rights activists. Our top story today is in Afghanistan. 15 diplomatic missions and a NATO representative in Kabul joined hands on Monday to urge the Taliban to halt military offensives across Afghanistan hours after a peace meeting in Doha failed to produce an agreement on a ceasefire. Libby Hogan of Reuters reports.
15 diplomatic missions in Afghanistan, as well as a NATO representative, called for a ceasefire with the Taliban on Monday. It comes just hours after a peace meeting in Doha failed to agree on a ceasefire. Afghan leaders met with the Taliban's political leadership in the Qatari capital over the last 2 days. But a Taliban statement late on Sunday made no mention of a halt to rising violence. Australia, Canada, the EU, and Germany were among those calling for the Taliban to halt offences. The Taliban has made sweeping gains as the US has withdrawn troops. They have captured several districts and border crossings in the north and west. The statement also condemned rights violations, such as efforts to shut schools and media organisations in areas recently captured by the Taliban, which has previously denied such allegations. The UN Refugee Agency estimates 270,000 Afghans have been displaced inside the country since January, bringing the number of people forced from their homes to more than 3.5 million.
That's Libby Hogan of Reuters. Former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says President Joe Biden made the right decision to withdraw U.S. troops from Afghanistan. AP correspondent Tim McGuire reports.
Taliban forces are making broad gains in northern Afghanistan as thousands of government troops flee across borders to avoid the fight. Even so, former Trump administration Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says he believes the government troops can secure their country.
We gave them 20 years, $30 billion a year of our assistance. We gave them all the training they could handle. It's time for them to step forward and actually deliver on security for themselves.
Under Trump, Pompeo oversaw negotiations with the Taliban. He applauds President Biden's decision to withdraw. Since the end of Trump's term, Pompeo has formed a political action committee and is considered a potential 2024 presidential candidate. I'm Tim McGuire.
Women's rights supporters and faith leaders are calling for United Nations peacekeeping force for Afghanistan to protect hard-won gains for women, as American and NATO forces complete their pullout from the war-torn country and the Taliban gains control over more territory. Under the Taliban, women were not allowed to go to school, work outside the home, or leave their homes without a male escort. And though they still face many challenges in the country's male-dominated society since 2001, Afghan women have increasingly stepped into powerful positions in numerous fields. Many fear the departure of international troops and the Taliban takeover could take away their gains. In a May 14th letter obtained by the Associated Press, 140 civil society and faith leaders from the U.S., Afghanistan, and other countries, quote, dedicated to the educational rights of women in Afghanistan, unquote, asked U.S. President Joe Biden to call for a U.N. peacekeeping force to, quote, ensure the cost of U.S. military withdrawal from Afghanistan is not paid for in the lives of schoolgirls, unquote. On Sunday, Afghanistan said it had asked all of its diplomats in Pakistan to return to Kabul until Islamabad addresses all of what it was calling, quote, security risks, unquote, and bring to justice those behind last week's brief abduction of the Afghan ambassador's daughter. VOA's Ayaz Gol in Islamabad shares the latest with International Edition's Steve Miller.
It is unfortunate that the relationship between Afghanistan and Pakistan is already fragile and, you know, marred by suspicions and mistrust. And now we see this incident, although it is still under investigation, and it happened on Friday afternoon. But for the first time, the Afghan embassy informed the Pakistani foreign ministry on Saturday. And then the investigation began, and Pakistan promised that they will quickly unearth whoever was behind it. So while we were waiting for an outcome of the investigation, because most of the links they have been able to connect, dots they have been able to connect, like where she was, Afghan ambassador's daughter, you know, where she was traveling and how she got kidnapped. But then suddenly this Afghan foreign ministry issued a statement a couple of hours ago that Afghan President Ashraf Ghani has ordered all the diplomats, including the ambassador in Islamabad, to return to Kabul until this incident is properly investigated and those behind it are brought to justice.
What do we know more about the actual kidnapping incident itself? Because, you know, the information that's coming out from Afghanistan was that the ambassador's daughter was severely tortured. What have the authorities said about what happened?
This has been confirmed by the medical report that we have seen after her examination was conducted in a hospital in Islamabad, that she was tortured, physically attacked. The statement that the lady has given to the police in Islamabad was that she was out for some kind of shopping for her brother, buying some gift. The interesting aspect of the whole event that she has described in her statement is that she was traveling in a rented car. Like, she wasn't traveling to this commercial area in Islamabad in the diplomatic vehicle, which, you know, the families and all diplomats are bound to use the diplomatic vehicles which are properly secured. Instead, she was traveling in a cab. And that's when she said that while she was on her way home, this cab driver stopped the car. Some person, unknown individual, entered the car. And that's when he took her hostage for several hours. And then later she was found somewhere in a residential sector in Islamabad. So again, whatever we know so far about this whole incident is from what this victim has described to police. But today, the Pakistani Interior Minister, Sheikh Rashid, told a news conference that they have been able to collect all the footages of the CCTV cameras around Islamabad, and they have connected almost all the dots. Like, they can see the lady driving from one point to another point and to a third point. So they are hopeful, and they have already identified several cab drivers, you know, whether it was a criminal act or whether there were other motives, we still don't know. But it has really dealt a serious blow to an already troubled relationship between the two countries, because it is very crucial at this stage that Pakistan and Afghanistan closely cooperate, because both the countries share a very long border, and Pakistan has been credited with facilitating peace talks between the Afghan government representative and the Taliban insurgents, which are going on in Qatar.
That's VOA's Ayaz Goh speaking with my colleague Steve Miller from Islamabad. With COVID-19 cases rising in the United States, some cities and counties are telling all residents to wear masks indoors, even if they are vaccinated, while the Biden administration points to the prevalence of misinformation about vaccinations, especially on social media, as discouraging people from getting shots. VOA's Michelle Quinn reports.
Throughout the United States, cases of COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus, are rising. Driving the surge, officials say, is the spread of the Delta variant, combined with low vaccination rates in some communities, often fueled by misinformation about the vaccine. It was only in mid-June when California celebrated the lifting of pandemic restrictions. Now, some communities, such as Los Angeles, have reinstituted mask guidelines for indoor gatherings, even for the vaccinated.
I'm not pleased that we have to go back to using the mask in this manner, but nonetheless, it's going to save lives. And right now, that to me is what's most important.
The Delta variant appears to be making inroads, even in places where many are inoculated. In San Francisco, with 76% of residents over 12 fully vaccinated, cases rose fourfold for the week ending July 7, according to the San Francisco Chronicle. President Joe Biden and others in his administration say nearly all those hospitalized for COVID-19 are unvaccinated.
I'm worried that what we're starting to see increasingly in states like Arkansas and Missouri and Nevada and my home state of Florida and Louisiana, these surges within the unvaccinated population, that we will continue to see that unless we get a hold of this pandemic by getting more people vaccinated.
The Biden administration is calling for social media firms to do more to counter the spread of vaccine misinformation on their sites. Facebook responded that it has taken down more than 18 million pieces of COVID-19 misinformation and will continue to do so, but fighting the pandemic will take all of society. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
Pressure is ratcheting up against Donald Trump and his closest circle. His company, the Trump Organization, is under criminal investigation on suspicion of tax fraud and other illegal financial dealings. Yet, the former president remains popular among the Republicans and wields an outsized influence over the party. White House correspondent Patsy Widaskuwara has this story.
Most former U.S. presidents stay largely out of the public eye, except when they're filmed kitesurfing like Barack Obama or launching a scholarship like Bill Clinton and George W. Bush.
People are going to be able to say when they finish this program, I learned a lot about leadership.
Donald Trump is different. He's still holding rallies, attacking President Joe Biden, and amplifying what Democrats call the big lie. In an informal poll at the Conservative Political Action Conference in Texas last week, Trump won 70% of the votes for the 2024 Republican presidential nomination. Earlier this year, he hinted he might run again.
A Republican president will make a triumphant return to the White House, and I wonder who that will be.
Whether he will or not could depend on whether the Republican candidates he endorses win in the midterm congressional elections in 2022. Thomas Schwartz is a presidential historian at Vanderbilt University.
Trump still retains a very solid core of Republican support, which gives him a power within the party. It's not enough necessarily to win an election, but it's enough to win a Republican primary, enough to perhaps get renominated. They might lose because Trump carries so much baggage, but he might be able to indeed win the nomination again. And that's one of the reasons why I think Republican office holders are approaching him very cautiously, and you only have a few who are really willing to defy him directly.
Those who do pay the price. In May, Republicans in the House of Representatives ousted Liz Cheney from her leadership position after she repudiated Trump for baselessly claiming that Biden won the election due to fraud, leading to the January 6th storming of the U.S. Capitol by Trump supporters.
We cannot be dragged backward by the very dangerous lies of a former president.
Trump wields power even amid lawsuits and scandals. His company, the Trump Organization, is under criminal investigation on suspicions of fraud and other illegal business dealings. Trump's lawyer Alan Futterfass say the lawsuits are politically motivated.
I think in 244 years, we have not had a local prosecutor go after a former president of the United States or his employees or his company. And that is a significant line to cross.
And as Americans continue to grapple with the storming of the U.S. Capitol, a new book revealed that top U.S. military leaders were so concerned that Trump might attempt a coup after losing the November 2020 election, they had planned ways to stop him. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
This is the Voice of America. The corruption trial of former South African President Jacob Zuma resumed Monday. The criminal case is separate from his imprisonment for contempt of court earlier this month. His imprisonment triggered protests that escalated into widespread unrest in KwaZulu-Natal, Zuma's home province, and Gauteng, South Africa's most populous province that includes Johannesburg, the country's largest city. President Joe Biden is set to host King Abdullah II of Jordan, a meeting that comes at one of the most difficult moments of the Jordanian leader's 22-year rule and a pivotal moment in the Middle East for Biden. Abdullah arrives at the White House on Monday afternoon. The Russian military has reported another successful test launch of a new Zircon hypersonic cruise missile. Russia's defense minister said the missile was launched on Monday from a Navy frigate in the White Sea in the north of Russia. The ministry said the missile successfully hit a target more than 217 miles away on the coast of the Barents Sea. You're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. An Israeli company's spyware was used to hack smartphones belonging to journalists, government officials, and human rights activists around the world, according to a new investigation by 17 media organizations. Eve Johnson of Reuters reports.
Spyware licensed to an Israeli company has been used to hack key smartphones around the world, from journalists and rights activists to government officials, including heads of state. That's according to a new report by Paris-based nonprofit Forbidden Stories, an alliance of 17 media companies. The report documents 37 hacks or attempts using spyware called Pegasus, including the phones of two women who were close to Jamal Khashoggi, according to The Washington Post, one of the media contributors. Khashoggi was working as a columnist at the Post when he was murdered at a Saudi consulate in Turkey in 2018. According to the Israeli company NSO Group, the spyware is intended to help governments fight terrorism and crime. It has blasted the report as full of, quote, wrong assumptions and uncorroborated theories. Pegasus allows operators to extract messages, photos, and emails from smartphones. It can also record calls and secretly activate microphones. The report did not detail who had attempted the hacks or why, but it referenced a list of phone numbers provided to the media organizations. Reporters identified more than 1,000 people on the list, including members of Arab royal families, business executives, activists, and prime ministers. Journalists from CNN, The New York Times, and Reuters were also included.
That's Eve Johnson of Reuters. UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet, is calling on Cuban authorities to release those arrested during mass demonstrations protesting the government's failed economic policies. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
These are the biggest anti-government demonstrations Cuba has seen for decades. Thousands of people have come out to vent their anger at government policies, which have led to the economic collapse of this Caribbean island state. Anti-government activists in Cuba estimate more than 100 protesters have been arrested during the week-long demonstrations. UN Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet is calling for the prompt release of those detained. Her spokeswoman, Liz Throssell, says Bachelet deplores the government arrest of people for exercising their rights to freedom of peaceful assembly or freedom of opinion and expression.
It's particularly worrying that these include individuals allegedly held incommunicado and people whose whereabouts are unknown. We're also very concerned at the alleged use of excessive force against demonstrators in Cuba and deeply regret the death of one protester in Havana. It's important that there is an independent, transparent, effective investigation and that those responsible are held accountable.
Miguel Díaz-Canel became president of Cuba in 2018. He's the first person other than the Castro brothers, Fidel and Raúl, to rule this communist state in almost 60 years. The economy under his guidance has taken a battering. People have come out en masse to show their displeasure at high food prices, shortages of medicine and other commodities, and at what they perceive to be government mishandling of the COVID-19 pandemic. The government blames Cuba's economic crisis on the decades-long U.S. embargo. However, experts agree the government's Soviet-style centrally planned economy and lack of market reforms must share the blame for stifling the country's economic growth. Bachelet is urging the Cuban government to address the protesters' grievances through dialogue and to respect people's rights to protest peacefully. She is calling for the internet and social media cut off by the government to quell dissent to be restored. Bachelet reiterates her appeal for the lifting of unilateral sectoral sanctions, which she says harm human rights, including the right to health. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Rescue efforts continue in Germany and Belgium after flooding and heavy rains battered entire towns and killed more than 200 people. German Chancellor Angela Merkel visited a devastated town on Sunday as the death toll across Europe from flooding rose to more than 200 people. David Doyle of Reuters has more.
Angela Merkel has described flooding that has devastated parts of Europe as terrifying after seeing for herself the destruction in one town. Germany's Chancellor visited Schuld on Sunday, where roads have been washed away, a sanitation system is submerged, and phone and internet networks are either down or unusable. Her visit came as the death toll across Europe caused by record rainfall and floods hit 187. 157 of those are in Germany. Merkel said there was no word in the German language to describe the scale of the devastation, as she promised swift financial aid. She also said governments would have to get better and faster in their efforts to tackle the impact of climate change. The European floods, which began on Wednesday, have mainly hit the German states of Rhineland-Palatinate and North Rhine-Westphalia, as well as parts of Belgium. Entire communities have been cut off, without power or communications. As efforts continued on Sunday to track down missing people, flash floods hit a district of Bavaria, turning roads into rivers, sweeping away vehicles, and killing at least one person. Hundreds of rescue workers are looking for survivors in the area, which borders Austria. Around 110 people have been killed in Germany's worst-hit district, Ahrweiler, to the south of Cologne. Police say more bodies are expected to be found there as the floodwaters recede.
That's David Doyle of Reuters. Venom from an Australian spider that is one of the world's deadliest could save the lives of heart attack victims. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
A potentially life-saving treatment for victims of heart attacks has been found in a most unlikely source, the venom of one of the world's deadliest spiders. The World Health Organization says cardiovascular diseases are the leading cause of death globally, taking an estimated 17.9 million lives each year. Researchers from the University of Queensland have discovered that the poison from the Fraser Island funnelweb spider in eastern Australia contains what could be a life-saving molecule or peptide. Known as HI1A, it could block so-called death signals sent to cells after a cardiac arrest when blood flow to the heart is reduced. This results in a lack of oxygen to the heart muscles, causing cells to become acidic, and a message is sent for heart cells to die. Despite decades of research, scientists haven't been able to develop a drug that stops this death signal. Australian experts have said that's one of the reasons why heart disease continues to be the leading cause of death around the world. Dr. Sarah Scheuer is a researcher at the Victor Chang Cardiac Research Institute, which is part of the spider venom study. She says the discovery could also help transplant patients.
If we're using this special little peptide to a small portion of the funnel web spider venom. But what we found is this peptide is able to help protect the heart where there's a lack of blood supply or blood flow. And we found that this can be used both not only in heart transplantation, so when the donor heart out of the body during the transplant process, but potentially could also be used in heart attack victims to help minimise the damage that occurs.
Australian researchers believe that the molecule from spider venom blocks the heart's ability to sense acid after a cardiac arrest, disrupting the death message. They've said their vision for the future was for HI1A to be administered by first responders in the ambulance. The discovery builds on earlier work that found a small protein in the venom of the Fraser Island funnelweb spider markedly improved patients' recovery from a stroke. The protein has been tested in human heart cells, and the Australian team is aiming to start clinical trials for both stroke and heart disease within 2 to 3 years. The research was published in the journal Circulation. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
England's nightclubs have reopened as the country lifted most remaining restrictions after more than a year of lockdowns, mask mandates and other pandemic-related curbs on freedom. There was joy on dance floors across the country at overnight Freedom Day parties, but the big step out of lockdown is being met with nervousness by many Britons. And there is concern from scientists who say the UK is entering uncharted waters by opening up when infections are not falling but soaring. Prime Minister Boris Johnson, who urged people to be cautious, is spending, quote, Freedom Day, unquote, in quarantine. Johnson and Treasury Chief Rishi Sunak are both self-isolating for 10 days after contact with Health Secretary Sajid Javid, who tested positive for COVID-19. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great evening.